following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Welcome to The Leftovers, brought to you by the Underdog Sports Network, with Josh Dunn, Anshu Khanna, and Dan Bauer. Hello and welcome to The Leftovers. It is Monday, April 30th. I'm Josh Dunn. I'm joined this evening as we record here on Sunday night by Dan Bauer. Dan, how are you feeling after the weekend's NFL draft?
Not quite as high as I was on our last show after that first round, but I'm sure plenty we can get to here later in today's show to get my feelings on it.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk draft here on this show, but we're also going to talk NBA playoffs. It was an exciting weekend, one that didn't start off as an exciting weekend. I actually told you I was going to go to the game in Indianapolis. I did, and good Lord, do I wish I didn't. They get blown out. It was just an absolutely pathetic performance by the Cavs. You know, after that first quarter, they just really fell apart and never came back. So we won't belabor that point. But the Raptors did close out the Wizards, and that was a pretty solid game down the stretch, a close one. You know, Bradley Beal had a big game in this one, but the Raptors were just too much for Washington. Was there any surprise there by you that this one didn't end up going seven?
No, I mean, that Raptors team, well, at least I would say before the series started, I thought the Raptors were going to make quick work of them. I think once we got into the series a little bit, I thought there was a very good chance it was going to go the full seven. But, the Raptors kind of remembered how good they were for the entire season. You know, obviously, Beal and Wall put up as good a fight as they could. Again, they had one of those games where they're scoring more than half of their team's points. So just not enough of a supporting cast. You know, those guys get 55 between the two of them, but just not quite enough to get the victory.
Yeah, and really that fourth quarter, they just kind of fell apart. Obviously, the Raptors were playing really good defense in the fourth quarter, but the Wizards were winning by five going into the fourth. They end up losing by 10, so only scoring 14 points in that fourth quarter ended up leading to their demise. I think this Wizards team maybe got as far as a lot of people thought they could have gotten, but, you know, I thought this one had a chance to go seven, especially being that they were in Washington, D.C., but it just wasn't enough. And it's going to be interesting to see in this offseason what transpires with this Wizards team. Obviously, you know, John Wall's been the anchor there, but there's been some concern as to whether or not he's, you know, too demanding. There have been obviously some inner squad feuds over there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this team in this offseason, because they've paid Otto Porter and max contract last year. They've got young guys like Kelly Oubre. What happens with Marcin Gortat? It'll be an interesting storyline to keep an eye on, because this Wizards team has a solid core, but they just can never seem to get over the hump. So the Raptors move on. We'll talk about who their foe is here shortly. But the big surprise for me was this Utah Jazz team. Only took them six games to finish off the Thunder. Westbrook had a vintage Russell Westbrook performance with 46 points and 10 rebounds. But Donovan Mitchell, the young rookie, with 38 to lead the Jazz to victory. I definitely thought this one was going to go seven, and I was back and forth with who I thought would win the series, but a little surprised that the Jazz were able to do it in six here.
Yeah, the coming out party for Mitchell for sure. I don't think a lot of people expected him to have 38 in a deciding game as a rookie, when the season started. So, great for him, and way to, put a team on your back and beat a team that no one outside of maybe our other co-host Anshu expected to get a victory here at the start of this game. But, Russ had an absolutely insane game, 46 points, seven threes in there, 10 rebounds. So, just not enough. Again, kind of story of a couple of these playoff series is you have your superstar putting teams on their back and just not enough from the supporting cast. Between Anthony Brewer and George, you had 14 points. So, when three of your starters are getting 14 points, it's pretty tough to win a basketball game.
Yeah, the Thunder, that's another interesting storyline to keep an eye on this offseason. Carmelo came out and said after the game he would not accept a bench role, which has been something that we've seen Carmelo say for the past couple offseasons. You know, I think at this point in his career, you almost expect him to be in a bench role, but he came out and said that he won't do it. Obviously, there's the storyline with Paul George. He's going to be a free agent. Where does he go? A lot of talk about the L.A. Lakers. Russ and his press conference said, you know, he thinks he will stay, but... you know, the recruiting starts now to keep Paul George in Oklahoma City, and they definitely didn't get enough done, in my opinion, to make a case for it. But we'll see where he ends up. So two fine storylines to keep an eye on. But back in the East, the Celtics were able to win Game 7 against the Bucks, and this was a fun series, back and forth. Obviously, Antetokounmpo, one of the young stars in the league, Chris Middleton had a big one here in this game in Game 7 with 32. But the story on the other side was Al Horford and Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier finishing with 26 points in this game on 10 of 16, hit 5 threes. You know, this is the guy who was expected to come in and have to fill the shoes of Kyrie Irving. And, you know, in this entire series, really, he played excellent. It was funny. I'm not a huge Celtics fan, as our listeners will probably know. But it was pretty funny when they had a technical foul on Eric Bledsoe, and the Celtics faithful started chanting, "Who is Bledsoe?" as they, you know, were obviously trolling his quote of "Who is Terry Rozier?" So I thought that was funny, but the Celtics pulled this one out, and they had their hands tied, or excuse me, they had their work cut out for them, I should say, in this series with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, you know, you needed a bigger game out of Giannis, which obviously, you know, if they're going to beat Boston in a series, you need more than 22 out of him. You mentioned Eric Bledsoe with a really great game, you know, 9-12 from the field from him. You know, so you know, they put up their best fight, but that Celtics team in the end, like you said, you know, when you're getting 26 from Horford and Rozier, just, you know, really filling those shoes, like you said, of Kyrie, and one of those ones that I don't think I would have ever expected that he'd have been able to fill those shoes, but he definitely did his best impression.
Yeah, I think what you want to look out for with this one and with the Celtics as we move forward is Jaylen Brown is doubtful for Game 1, as the Celtics will take on the 76ers. So, you know, Jaylen Brown, especially with the injuries that the Celtics have faced, obviously with Kyrie out, Marcus Smart's been in and out of the lineup. Jaylen Brown's been one of the bright spots on this team, and I think they really will need him if they're going to be able to make this a series against Philadelphia. The Sixers have been kind of everybody's consensus team now, especially after watching the Cavs struggles in the East to come out and go to the finals. But if the Celtics are going to put up a fight, they're going to need Jaylen Brown to get healthy. So we will see if he ends up playing beyond Game 1, but it looks like he's not going to be there for Game 1 for the Celtics. We will be keeping an eye on it, but that series could get out of hand quickly if they don't have one of their bright young stars. The other game on Saturday was the Warriors-Pelicans. Warriors just really ran away with this one. It was a fast-paced game, but the Pelicans could just never get it together again after that first quarter. They get killed in the second quarter. The Warriors outscoring them 41-21 in that second quarter, and it really ran away from there.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the Cinderella run for my New Orleans Pelicans is probably coming to an end here in five games, you know, if they're lucky. So a good run for them, but I think this is the beginning of the end.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong. I'd love to see the Pelicans make a series out of this. They didn't get the kind of performance that they've seen really all year out of Anthony Davis. I mean, he still finishes with 21-10, which is... it's nothing to scoff at, but they didn't get the role players to have the type of performance that we've come accustomed to from them in these playoffs. Mirotić is 3 of 9, Drew Holiday 4 of 14, Rondo finished with 9 points, so really just did not have that supporting cast out there doing what they've been able to do, you know, toward the end of this season and into the playoffs. And then when you have the Warriors, they're still without Steph Curry. Looks like he'll probably be back for Game 2. It could get ugly. Klay Thompson had a big game in this one. So did Durant. Draymond Green had a triple-double. But the Warriors, like I said, this one got out of hand pretty quickly. And really, by the look of things now, you look at the West, and obviously both Western Conference semifinals here underway. So the Warriors running away with Game 1. Also, the Rockets running away with Game 1 against the Jazz. The Jazz kept going on these little runs and looking like they were going to come back. And every time they did it, the Rockets put a stop to it. James Harden with a big performance, 41-8-7. Was anything surprising here for you, Dan, when you look at the Rockets with the big win against Utah?
No, I think, you know, a similar theme to the Pelicans. I think the storybook run comes to an end here. Houston just is going to blow them out. And if this thing even goes five, I would be surprised.
Yeah, I agree. The way it's shaping out is a lot of chalk there on the West. And, you know, if it is Rockets-Warriors, we're in for a treat, I think. I hope the Rockets play more like they're playing here against the Jazz than they did at times during the Minnesota series. But, you know, this Jazz team's not going to go down without a fight. I think that you'll see a spirited performance from them, you know, coming back here in Game 2. But I just don't think they have enough firepower to take out these Rockets. And if it is Rockets-Warriors, which it's looking like it will be after this first game of each of these series, like I said, I think we're in for a treat. So something to keep an eye on. But our Cavs, Dan, they had a battle today here in Cleveland as they go back home for Game 7. You know, they get George Hill back. He comes off the bench. But the big story in this game for the Cavs, aside from LeBron James having 45-9-7, was Tristan Thompson into the starting lineup. And in that first quarter, he was a huge difference maker. They get out to a big lead. The Pacers come storming back, and they do it time and time again throughout this series. But Tristan Thompson off the bench has 15 points on 5 of 6. Traditionally a horrible free throw shooter, finished 5 of 6 from the line and had 10 rebounds, 9 of which were in the first half. How big of a surprise was it not only to have Tyronn Lue make this big of a change by putting Tristan Thompson in the starting lineup, but also for him to have this kind of a performance when it mattered most?
Surprising as you begin to describe the fact that, you know, Ty Lue A had the guts to do it. You know, who thought he actually was able to make coaching decisions? We thought that was LeBron pulling all those. So crazy for him to do that. You know, Tristan, yeah, I mean, to his credit, played his butt off and, you know, got them to win. What we still continue to see and what we've talked about all year is this team has such an inability to close somebody out. Just gives up big leads left and right, and they've been doing it for, you know, now 89 games of this season. So they got to clean this up, and if they can't continue to let teams fight and come back and scratch and claw. You have to bury a team, and you have to you have to learn how to do it in this next series, or you're going to be going home, you know, in early May.
Yeah, I hope they aren't, but the way that things look, I mean, this Cavs team just might not be as good as we thought they had the potential to become, and Kevin Love needs to step it up. I mean, he had a few big threes in this game, but aside from that, he does not look like the all-star we've known him to be, and obviously this Pacers defense, you know, they were in their face the entire game. There was a lot of chippiness. There were some questionable calls down the stretch, but you know, the Pacers were playing tough, and they were playing like they wanted to win, and they almost pulled it out. The Cavs kind of went on a little run there right at the end of the game. LeBron comes off the bench after suffering from some cramps as he left the game in the third quarter. You know, he said to Darren Collison during the game he was going to play all 48 minutes, and I think he would have if he didn't cramp up. But he comes back in the game and didn't quite look like the player he was in the first half, but he still ends up willing the team to victory. The Cavs with a 4-point win, 105-101. They will take on Toronto. That series starts on Tuesday, and my eyes will be glued to the TV for that series. This has been a matchup that the Cavs seem to play every single year, and they just seem to have the Raptors' number, but I think this is a different... It's definitely a different Cavs team, but I think this is a different Raptors team, too, as they have one more year of experience under their belt.
Yeah, not only that, it's a Raptors team who knows how good they are and knows they can win, and it's something we've talked about now multiple times through this playoffs and March Madness. That's the most dangerous team is the one who fully believes that they can beat anybody in the gym.
Yeah, and they may be the best team in the gym when they face up with Cleveland. But like I said, you know, as a homer that we are here for Cleveland, I hope they can figure things out and continue to try to gel as they move through these playoffs. They've got at least four games to do it against the Raptors, but we'll see what happens. Did want to talk a little bit more about the NFL draft. Obviously, we talked about round one on Friday's show. There were a lot of good players still on the board as we moved through the weekend. Dan, in that second or third round, what are some of the picks that stood out to you during those two rounds? Excuse me.
Well, obviously, Darius Guy slipping, you know, a guy who was being talked about for the Browns, you know, with that 33rd pick, doesn't go there, and he's starting to slowly drop, and everyone's wondering what's going on, and eventually we got the reports coming out that he just had an absolutely horrendous interview process. He was missing interviews, he was lying to teams in interviews, just people were having a very horrible impression of him. So that was just a crazy story to watch, that watch him drop. Eventually goes 59th to the Washington R Words, and a team that it's a guy that if he can keep his head on straight, you might have got the steal of the draft. But if the attitude is where these teams are concerned, is unfortunately that's going to be a wasted pick for them. Another kind of curious one is Anshu's team, which I actually love what they did, but taking another player in the secondary, going Josh Jackson from Iowa, who I'm a huge fan of. I think he is a very underrated corner and a guy who's going to translate really well to the pro level. But they're shoring up their secondary, which we didn't necessarily expect them to go kind of back-to-back picks there. So those are kind of the two big ones that stood out to me in those rounds.
Yeah, Josh Jackson was a guy a lot of people had going in the first round too, and a lot of people even had him as their maybe number two or three corner. Obviously, your guy Denzel Ward was a lot of people's number one, but this Josh Jackson guy was a guy that a lot of people had going in that first round. To see him drop that far was a little surprising, but for Green Bay, it was definitely a position they made it a point to shore up here in this draft, and they did a good job of it with those first two picks. I wanted to get your thoughts here. We'll go a little zero bias, as your Browns had two picks there in the first three on that second round. They pick Austin Corbett out of Nevada, the guard, and Nick Chubb out of Georgia. I know you were thinking Darius Geis might be the pick, but where do you land on this Nick Chubb fella out of Georgia?
I love Nick Chubb. I mean, it's a guy that I would have wanted because I assumed that Geis was going to be gone. Obviously, since he was there, I wanted Geis. But I think Nick Chubb is going to be a very nice addition to this team. Obviously, with Duke Johnson and Carlos Hyde, he's a guy who runs great between the tackles. I mean, he is just going to run people over, and I can't wait to watch him do it. We obviously don't take him with that 33rd pick, but the 35th pick, huge fan of him. And I think, I think he's a step above some of the other guys that went, kind of close to him, guys like Ronald Jones, who ended up going 38 to Tampa, right there. I think, just like I said, a step or two ahead of those guys. And so, huge fan of that pick. What I didn't really understand was the Austin Corbett pick. We have a very solid, interior of that offensive line. It's a group that is a lot of money has been spent in the past couple off seasons to really shore up. What you really need is the heir apparent to Joe Thomas, who obviously retired this off season. Right now, Sean Coleman is likely the expected slate there. Second year player or third year player now, who I don't really like at all. I think he gets just run over and blown off the ball, and the fact that he is going to be your left tackle is a little unnerving to me. So Austin Corbett's a guy who is going to translate. He may have been listed, some people have been listed as a tackle, but he's going to play guard and center at the NFL level, and essentially can play tackle in an emergency from all indications. And the Browns really didn't need someone to play tackle in an emergency. They needed someone to play left tackle. So a little odd for them to go with Austin Corbett there instead of one of the other kind of true blue offensive tackles.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know your team better than I do, but I think they were looking at Corbett as a guy who provides some versatility. He can play both positions. And I think that, just having an added layer of depth for a line that already looks pretty solid, when you look at it on paper, it could provide somebody, to be able to come in and fill in for different positions due to injury or what have you. So I don't hate it. I like what the Browns did. What are your thoughts overall on their draft? Obviously, as you've had some time to let, the Baker Mayfield pick that you love, the Denzel Ward pick that you loved, and now some of these later round guys, some time to marinate. What are your thoughts on the draft overall?
Yeah, I mean, three out of four of those picks, you just kind of mentioned, absolute home runs. I mean, if you remember from the show we did right before the draft, I said my best case scenario was Baker Mayfield and Denzel Ward, and that's exactly what we did. I'm still out of this world ecstatic about it. If I have to argue with one more person, including in our group chat, about Baker Mayfield not being Johnny Manziel, I think I'm going to lose it. You know, I pose this question to a lot of Cleveland fans, and I don't think people really reflect on it well enough, is if Baker Mayfield played for Ohio State and he planted a flag in the middle of the Big House, the 50 in Ann Arbor, would Browns fans really still be upset that they drafted him? Or is it still just that lingering sentiment that he did it, you know, in the shoe, and, you know, people just, Buckeye fans and Browns fans can't separate those two teams in their head. So, you know, get over it, Cleveland. He's going to be our quarterback, you know, probably not this year, but next year, or maybe sometime this year if he takes over for Tyrod. I love it. I think he's going to be an absolute pro, and I think I've, you know, I don't know what else I can say about Baker if you don't love him now. You know, you don't have to show up to the muni lot this fall. We'll have plenty of support in Browns Nation without you. But some of the other kind of notable ones, Antonio Callaway is one that got probably the most discussion, most talked about. You know, he's a guy who some domestic violence assault issues, you know, a bunch of tested, or I don't know if he ever tested positive for weed, but some issues with drugs and alcohol. You know, guy who's first round talent, Florida wide receiver, but just dropped because of those character issues and concerns, potential legal issues as well. But you know, again, he's a guy that if he can keep his head on straight, you got arguably the best receiver in the draft in the fourth round. So you know, worth the flyer. I think it was a good pick. You know, a couple other, you know,
keep him away from Josh Gordon.
Yeah, that's the other, like, you know, there's the twofold, right? Like, is Josh Gordon a good influence on him, or is Antonio Callaway a horrible influence on Josh Gordon? Shored up, you know, that receiver and defensive back areas as well. You know, we took Texas A&M receiver Damian Ratley and Simeon Thomas out of Louisiana Lafayette, which he's a big, huge corner. I mean, he's like 6'3", 220 or something like that. But you know, he's got a lot to learn, and
190.
He's going to be a project. Oh, is he that skinny? Apologies. So he's tall. He's tall and got long arms.
He has got a lot of length.
Yeah. So you know, he's going to be a project, but you know, interesting pick late, number 188 overall. So. I don't necessarily love the back half of the draft, but you know, I think I've thoroughly explained how much I love the front half. But you know, what about you? Your Bengals. I know I was giving you a lot of grief on some of these picks, but what do you think?
Yeah, let me just before I talk a little bit about my Bengals, I would like to say I respect you for picking a lane with Baker Mayfield, and I don't necessarily agree with you on his talent and how it projects to the next level. But I love that you love Baker Mayfield, and I love that you love your first round pick. And whether or not your fellow fans get behind it or not, that's up to them. But I like that you chose a lane. I think he is going to be, you know, the fact that he's 6 foot, you know, that worries me a little bit. Obviously, the character issues are annoying, but I think that you like him because of his confidence and his swag, and I get that. So I just wanted to get that out there, clear the air a little bit. As for my Bengals, you know, they had 11 picks in this draft, and they had a lot of things that they wanted to fix. Offensive line was the number one thing. Obviously, going out and getting Cordy Glenn, you know, trading down 9 picks to the 21st pick with Buffalo. So essentially, they get their starting left tackle, who, if he stays healthy, I've mentioned, I think he has Pro Bowl level talent. They got Billy Price, who was projected as the top center in this draft until he tore his pec at the combine when he was doing the bench press. So I'm happy with that. He's a Youngstown guy. I'm a Youngstown guy. I get that. You know, it took me a little while because I really wanted Lamar Jackson at that pick, but I get where their head's at. They get 2 starting offensive linemen. They obviously pass on the quarterback, but they're in a win-now mentality. Marvin Lewis, you know, he's had chance after chance after chance. You know, we always joke about him never getting fired, but he really does have to win and win now. So I get where they're going. You know, they get their safety in Jesse Bates, the third out of Wake Forest. This is a guy that has good cover skills. I like what he was able to do at Wake Forest. I had a good opportunity to watch him a few times. Being a Florida State fan, that Wake Forest-Florida State game is always on at 11 o'clock here in Chicago, so that's the first thing I do as my hungover self wakes up on Saturdays to watch my Florida State Seminoles. But they go with another Ohio State guy in Sam Hubbard. This is a defensive end who should get rotation time immediately. And then Malik Jefferson was the one in this third round that I absolutely loved. I mentioned Malik Jefferson as somebody that I thought was a sleeper. I know Anshu mentioned him on shows in the past as well.
Credit to you for picking that one. You slotted that. So shout out to him.
I mean, I think this is a guy that can really step in there with Vontez Berfic suspended for the first four games of the season for PEDs. So I really think that Jefferson will see time immediately. You know, this linebacker room needed help drastically. Nick Vigil was one of their top linebackers last year. And, you know, Nick Vigil, he's an okay player, really should be on special teams. But I love Malik Jefferson. So I think this is going to be a great addition to this defense, and they needed it badly. Mark Walton, I watched him a lot at Miami. Obviously, he's had some injury issues, but I get where they're going with it. I didn't know that it was a need at this point in the draft in the fourth round. Obviously, you know, they were looking at potentially getting another quarterback. Mason Rudolph was a guy in the second round that I thought they may go after. And then in the third round, I think they would have probably drafted him, but Pittsburgh trades up to get him, and they go a different route. The other ones, there were a couple other ones. Logan Woodside's the quarterback out of Toledo that they end up taking in the seventh round. You know, he'll compete to make the team. They still have Jeff Driscoll, who was hurt last year with a broken hand. But obviously, you know, coming from a MAC school, there have been some successful MAC quarterbacks in the NFL. One of them, my least favorite player of all time, who shall remain nameless. But the one I really loved was Auden Tate. I mentioned Auden Tate, and I could not believe this guy was still available when the Bengals took their last pick of the draft. He's a guy who's 6'5", 228 pounds. You know, he didn't test well at the combine. You know, his 40 time wasn't what people expected. His vertical jump wasn't what people wanted out of him. But this is a guy who I watched, and he has football ability. And again, I mentioned that I think if DeAndre Francois doesn't get hurt in that first game against Alabama, you're hearing Auden Tate's name somewhere on that second day, probably in the second, third round. But for him to drop all the way to the seventh round, being able to provide a red zone talent, I absolutely love it. I hope he has an opportunity to make this team because they have a crowded wide receiver room. But when you add a guy who's 6'5", 228, basically could play tight end for you with his size, I love it. And the fact that they got one of the guys from the team I watch on a consistent basis, I was happy to see that. So overall, pretty happy with what the Bengals were able to do. I'm anxious to hear what Anshu's thoughts were on his Green Bay team's draft. Obviously, he's been on vacation these past few days and these past few episodes, but excited to hear what his thoughts were on his team. But I think for you as a Browns fan and for me as a Bengals fan, we have to at least be pretty content with what our teams were able to add here in this draft. And I'm just, as soon as that draft ends, you know, it's that lull where you're just waiting patiently and maybe not so patiently for that season to start and for training camp to start. So I'm pretty pumped to get to see where these guys end up and who makes the team and who doesn't. There were also some good undrafted free agents out there, so I'm looking forward to see who can give themselves an opportunity to make the team.
Yeah, I do have a quick question for you though. You know, I kind of ribbed you a little bit for it in our own chat, but I want to get your kind of honest take on this. So, you know, the Browns obviously take Baker Mayfield. You mentioned Mason Rudolph goes to the Steelers, which I thought that was a crazy, interesting story of this draft too, of repeatedly slipping. And, you know, he falls past you guys. He falls past the Patriots, you know, multiple teams who it kind of made sense for them to take him and keeps falling. Eventually the Steelers get him. The Ravens obviously take Lamar Jackson. So, you know, three out of four teams in the AFC North draft their quarterback of the future. Does that make you nervous? Do you wish you got? I know you said you wanted Mason Rudolph, and you know probably you do wish he would have, you know, they would have taken him. But you know, kind of, what are your thoughts on the fact that everyone else in the AFC North got their quarterback of the future, and you have, you know, Andy Dalton there potentially for a while, or potentially for one more year?
Yeah, I mean, you know my thoughts because I voiced them clearly about wanting to get Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson comes in, though, and he's not going to play this year. I think the Bengals, they thought about that, but they realized that they can go get a guy that was a bigger need for them right now. And I think it just kind of plays back into that narrative of wanting to be able to win now. So I get why they don't take Lamar Jackson in the first round. He ends up going to Baltimore, who trades back into the first round to get him with the last pick of the first round. I don't love the fact that he's going to be in our division and we're going to have to play against him in the future. And I think eventually he'll win that starting job from Flacco. I don't think it'll be in his first year. He's a project for them. But I love the pick for Baltimore. I just hate that he's in the division. The Browns were going to get a quarterback either way, so I'm not too concerned with that. And, you know, no offense, but they haven't exactly done the best job of drafting quarterbacks in the first round in the past. Not saying that Baker won't be good, and I know you're high on him, but, you know, it doesn't exactly concern me that the Browns picked the quarterback. The Mason Rudolph one does kind of annoy me just because the Steelers clearly drafted up and jumped ahead of the Bengals so they can pick a guy that we probably would have taken if he was still there. That one does kind of bug me, but if you're the Bengals and you really wanted Mason Rudolph, you could have gotten him in the second round. You could have traded up yourself to get him a little earlier in the third round. So I don't know. I mean, my thought is maybe they didn't want him as badly as they, you know, maybe led on or people at least speculated. But this is a guy who I think provides especially in the third round, who provides, you know, the potential replacement for Ben Roethlisberger whenever he decides to retire. They drafted Josh Dobbs out of Tennessee last year, and he's a guy that I just don't see really being a starter. Mason Rudolph, you know, Anshu loved him for good reason. He's got a strong arm. He comes from, you know, a program that threw the ball a lot in college, and I think he has the opportunity, you know, to be that heir apparent to somebody who's aging and 36 years old at this point in Roethlisberger. So, yeah, I don't love that. You know, I hate the fact that the Steelers consistently get players that, you know, they fit perfectly into the mold that team has for them. And, so to answer your question, very frustrated with that. But at the end of the day, this is what the draft is for. This is why it's so fun. And, you know, all three of our division rivals get their quarterback of the future, and we get Logan Woodside out of Toledo. So in the seventh round, no less.
I like Logan Woodside a lot. I mean, I know he's kind of like, will he make the team? But, you know, as a Ohio University Bobcat, you know, I watched a handful of his games, and I mean, the kid can throw. So it'll be, you know, not that I think he's a replacement for Andy Dalton, but you could have a worse guy to make your team as your third quarterback.
Yeah, the Bengals chose their lane. They said we're sticking with Andy Dalton for this year at the very least. You know, they could always get their quarterback of the future next year, but they've got Dalton. I think it's for three more years, I want to say, of his contract. I don't quote me on that, but you know, he's a guy who I want to see what he could do with an offensive line. I said that last year, and I've said that many times before. If you give Andy Dalton an offensive line and give him time to throw, he can usually beat you. So we'll see what that looks like now that we have, you know, shored up that offensive line. There's been talk about moving Cedric Obwehi to guard as well, who was drafted as a left tackle in the first round a few years back. So we'll see. I'm anxious to see what things shake out and, you know, how these picks filter into the mix. But I appreciate that question. And, it's definitely not great when you see all three of your division rivals getting better at the position that matters most in this league.
Nope. It is not. I mean, I hate the fact that the Steelers took Mason Rudolph because I also think he's going to be good. I agree with Anshu, and I was getting really excited for the premise of Big Ben having to retire or get banged up and get hurt and being able to kick the snot out of Josh Dobbs, who can barely handle being a college quarterback, let alone a pro quarterback.
Yeah, good point. Well, that's a long show for you guys. I wanted to get your by the way before we wrap things up and let our listeners get back to their Monday.
Just quick by the way, latest episode of Tales from the Show will be out Tuesday morning. So if you guys like the first episode or if you haven't checked it out yet, please do continue to, you know, rate it, review it, share it with your friends just like you do with the leftovers. We appreciate all of that so very much.
Nice. I will definitely check that out. Wanted to go into your hockey realm for a minute here. Obviously, I hate all things Pittsburgh. I was very happy to see the Washington Capitals bring that game to even today. And just like Pittsburgh generally does, they had a lot of complaints about the refereeing in the game, which I find kind of funny, you know, they're complaining about the refs because this wasn't necessarily, you know, the closest of games. But the Stanley Cup playoffs are rolling along too, Dan, and I know you you keep a close eye on this, but I was able to watch some of that Capitals game after the Cavs ended there, and we've got a tight one going on, an overtime game with Winnipeg and Nashville right now as well. That Nashville game, I don't know, I just wanted to mention before we call it quits here, did you see the offensive lineman bonging a beer out of a catfish before the game?
Yeah, classic.
Love that.
We're back to hockey season.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So good stuff. Any last thoughts?
Unfortunately, it's the end of draft week. draft week end, everybody. And I know it's going to feel like a very long time until we get football, but you know, we'll have OTAs soon. It looks like the Browns are going to be on Hard Knocks, as the you know, the rumor mill floating. So I kind of forgot to mention that in there, but nothing's official yet. So we'll talk a little bit more when it actually is on my thoughts on that, if it is true. But you know, football season be here before we know it. Until then, enjoy NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, baseball season, and tune into The Leftovers, and we'll recap it all for you.
Love it. For Dan Bauer, I'm Josh Dunn. This has been The Leftovers.